Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you very, very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to reach out, Jeff, at beekeepingfornewbies.com. It's N-E-W-B-E-E-S.com. Well, today we are here at... lungs are still itching here. I'm trying not to cough. Man, this thing has just been a wreck. Anyway, I hope everybody's doing well. You guys are all staying out of trouble, doing the right thing, all that kind of stuff, getting pumped up. We got Thanksgiving this month if you're in the U.S. Christmas is right around the corner. If you're looking for any last-minute birthday gifts for me this year, let me know. I can help you out with that, too. Okay, so today we're going to do something that is a little bit different. It's bee-related, but definitely not a how-to-keep-bees-related subject. I figure it's probably a pretty good off-season kind of thing to talk about. It's something that came up in the Discord room. I think it would be good to talk about some proposed legislation. But before we do that, hey, let's talk about today's warm-up song, Hey, Hey, What Can I Do? By the greatest rock band of all time. I don't have to say it because I know you guys already know, but Led Zeppelin, of course. And special thanks to all the Buy Me a Coffee folks. I can't do this without you guys. Thank you very, very much. And for those of you getting ready to follow along at home with the Hive Monitoring Project, my entire dining room table is completely covered with electronic parts and pieces, components, tools, monitoring things, power supplies, all kinds of stuff. So I finally am at a point where I'm just about ready to kick off the recording for that to show you guys everything that's going to be needed to do this project. There is an added component that I've come across. I'm not going to buy it right now, but it is CO2 monitoring. It's just some modules that I can incorporate into this to do that. For this first winter testing that I'm doing, I'm not going to need to monitor CO2 because there's no bees in these test hives. So I'm not going to put the money out there to buy those sensors just yet. I've also found some low-cost weight sensors. And what I'm thinking about with those is, one, being able to incorporate those into the project, but two, just to create a separate, almost standalone module. I saw some weight things that were really, really pricey. If you want to have constant monitoring of your hives, I found sensors that can monitor, I think it was up to 200 kilograms. So it's like 400 pounds, 420 pounds, something like that. And the four sensors, I mean, obviously you're buying a raw sensor. You're not getting anything with it. But if you can do some basic fabrication of something, the four sensors were like $7 for all four of them. So I thought, well, if I can take the four sensors, incorporate them into the electronics that we're already using, then maybe we can do hive weight monitoring at the same time. So we'll see how that goes. Like I said, I've identified them. I know where they are. I know how to get them. I'm just not going to spend the money on those extra things right now since we're not going to be using them. But just quick recap, it's temperature, humidity, air pressure, temperature across about 20 to 50 sensors, depending on which setup I'm messing with at any given point in time. Maybe the weight and the CO2. So I think I've got all the parts completely ready to go. And I'll do a recording intro of all those parts next week with all the pieces if you want to follow along. Okay, so today we're going to dive into something that's been, it's kind of flying a little bit under the radar up in Pennsylvania, but it could have a pretty significant impact on every beekeeper up there. And potentially beyond that, if things continue the way that a lot of legislation does, you know how things are. It's like one thing happens somewhere and like it kind of goes on the radar. Not a lot of people know about it. And then other legislators are like, oh, cool. They pulled that off in their state. Maybe we can do it, too. And then next thing you know, you have like 5 or 10 states that are doing something stupid. And then you got to really fight and claw to kind of, you know, once things become law, man, it's a pain in the butt to get them reversed. The Pennsylvania state, or the state of, well, I guess it's the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, has introduced something called the Plant and Pollinator Protection Act. Say that 10 times fast. Also known as SB or Sierra Bravo 1198. Now, I think most people listening are probably pretty, you know, well-versed on places in the U.S. or whatever, but Pennsylvania is a state on the eastern side of the U.S., just like north and northwest of Washington, D.C. would put you kind of near the center of the state. Kind of in between like Maryland and New York and Ohio and all those places. Anyway, beautiful state, a lot of cool people there, a lot of good folks in the Discord room there, a lot of listeners there. So it's not the worst place to be. But anyway, so on the surface, the title sounds great, right? Protecting plants and pollinators sounds like something that, you know, usually we can all get behind. Makes sense. But once you read the actual bill, it kind of becomes a little bit clear that this isn't just about protection. It's kind of a complete rewrite of the old bee law, which has been in place a really long time. And then it also folds in a legacy plant and pest act as well. So I like the idea of combining old things, refreshing them, giving them new, current things. Like if something was done 50, 60 years ago, they weren't talking about Varroa, might be a good idea to incorporate that into something that's being modernized. So I get that. But this is like hundreds of pages long. It's a lot of, you know, dense, of course, legal language. And it significantly increases the Department of Agriculture's authority over beekeeping operations. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, Jeff, I'm not going to worry about that because I'm just a small-time hobbyist. You're going to be impacted by this as well. So, obviously, you guys know me, right? I'm not a huge proponent of excess government intervention in anything because it is my opinion that everything that the government touches, they find a way to break. If you'd like to have a discussion around VA healthcare, I'm more than happy to explain to you an example of a broken system that's run by the government. Lots of great, amazing human beings work at the VA, and I'm very thankful and grateful and blessed to have all of them in my life. But as a system, it's just terrible, absolutely terrible. Anyway, I am going to really do the best I can to keep everything balanced and focus on the educational side of things and explain, you know, what's in the bill, what it could mean for both hobbyists, sideliners, maybe some commercial folks as well. And then you can decide for yourself if it's, you know, if it's right, wrong, you don't like it, you do like it, completely up to you. Okay, so technically the current law has been around since 1994. I think maybe the original one was back to the 30s or something like that. I'd done some reading on this and it was back to like 1932 is sticking around in my brain. That may have been when the original legislation was passed years ago. But the current bee law, again, since 1994, very simple, straightforward. It's worked for decades, right? It's not causing problems for anybody. If you have bees, you have to register your apiary with the Department of Agriculture. You pay $10 every 2 years. Inspectors do have the right to look at your colonies, right? If they suspect disease, obviously American foul brood's a big thing. You know, that would be kind of the big driver. But they're usually really good about coordinating with beekeepers, and they're only intervening when they absolutely have to. Now, I do know somebody who kind of talked me through their initial inspection, and they said, yeah, I had an inspector. They were supposed to be there at like 11 a.m. or whatever it was. And like several hours had gone by. They didn't call and say, hey, by the way, I'm going to be late. You know, it took a lot of time to get there. But they ultimately did show up, got the inspection done. I think what it was is they found foul brood at the previous inspection and that completely locked them up for the day. But they didn't even call and say, hey, by the way, you know, I'm running late. I got an issue. Let's reschedule. But they did ultimately get it rescheduled, get it done. From what I understand, the inspectors were nice and kind and cordial and all that kind of stuff. But again, they're really focused on, hey, let's just keep it simple for beekeepers, inexpensive, just trying to have some very basic regulation in place. I think a lot of it is really important. I think being able to know where bees are being kept is important. Being able to have a notification system to reach out to beekeepers and say, hey, all the beekeepers in this county or in this block, this so many square mile area, whatever it might be, hey, something came up that you're going to want to be aware of. So having some kind of registration in place makes perfect sense. $10 fee, absolutely fair, right? There is still back-end information systems and things that have to catalog and maintain, you know, this information. These things obviously aren't free. We don't want to have to necessarily tap into other agriculture department programs. It would be nice to be able to supplement the ag department with a couple of dollars just to help support that, you know, the maintenance of who's who and where they are. So again, nothing wrong with that. But SB 1198 takes that very simple, basic cooperative system and turns it into this full licensing kind of regime. It replaces the bee law entirely and it merges it with the old Plant Pest Act under a single title called, you know, Plant and Pollinator Protection Act. Now, the idea, according to the department, is modernization. They say they want to bring the law up to date with current science, trade practices, pest threats. Cool. I get it. Makes sense. And on paper, that sounds absolutely fine. But by the way it's written, it really opens up a lot of new powers that could be used in ways that make life a lot more difficult for small time, small scale, and hobbyist beekeepers. So let's go through a few of these changes and kind of talk about it. So the new act defines an air quotes kind of pollinator operation as anyone managing honeybees for commercial, business, or personal use. So that means backyard beekeeper, if you have one single hive, you are now a pollinator operation. So to keep bees legally, instead of just a registration that you used to have, you now have to have a license. The license can be denied, revoked, or suspended at any time if the department believes that you're not compliant with any part of the act. There's no exception for personal hives, educational beekeeping, or anything else. So again, right, like red flags are starting to pop up. And the things I think about is I've been really fortunate that inspectors and state apiarists and different people I've worked with over the years have really been fairly okay to work with. I haven't really had any issues. But I have definitely heard some horror stories about people, and it's usually been, the stories I've heard that have been bad are usually one of two things. It's usually either a guy like my age, like some dude who's in his 40s or 50s or even older, who's doing inspection, and you know, it's like a female beekeeper, and he's like trying to like just be like not cool, just trying to like, you know, like give her a hard time. You know, and again, I've heard a few of those stories where this guy has to show her how smart he is and how awesome he is. You know, it's like, dude, just show up and do the thing and talk the person through it, sign the paperwork and move on. But I've heard a couple of those stories. And then I've heard the ones where you had some folks who were kind of younger, newer beekeepers who are getting into these entry level inspection roles. And then they're showing up to, a very experienced beekeeper. And that beekeeper is being told like, well, you have to do this, you have to do that, and you got to do this and you got to do that. And they're like, are you sure? Because I've been doing it the other way for the past 20 some years. And Jim, who just retired from the job you have now, always said that was fine. I don't think anything has changed. So there's always going to be like little things like that with any kind of a, you know, inspection of anything. I've seen the same thing with, you know, construction inspections for, you know, electrical or plumbing or other things. Different personalities are going to be all over the world and in all walks of life. So you can't really fight that. But for the most part, most of the people I've dealt with have been really easy to work with. They're there for the bees. They're big agriculture proponents and supportive. And so it's usually not a big deal. But again, getting back to that last thing here with not having any kind of an exemption or anything for hobbyist or for educational purposes, like I was going to have a while back when I had a lot more bees at my property, I was thinking, you know, maybe I should just maintain a couple hives at the house, even though I don't really have a lot of time for home recreational beekeeping. It kind of would be nice if somebody was, you know, new or wanted to learn something, or if I wanted to jump over to a school and go outside and just show everybody what, you know, what a hive looks like and go through a few things. It'd be kind of cool to have those on hand. But if you put a law like this in place, then I guess I'm out, right? Like I can't have it for educational purposes because I've got to become a licensed, you know, pollinator operation. Under the current bee law, inspectors can enter an apiary to check for disease. But it, again, it's a scheduled cooperative kind of thing. The new act gives inspectors the right to enter any licensed premises, any outyard, any vehicle associated with beekeeping at any reasonable time without needing your permission. Even non-licensed property can be entered if they have reasonable suspicion of a pest. And if you don't respond to an inspection notice within 36 hours, it's automatically considered a refusal of entry, which is a violation that can lead to penalties. That's a pretty big expansion of authority. I mean, it effectively turns your apiary into an open facility the department can access, you know, whenever it wants. Now, you have to kind of play devil's advocate at least a little bit and say, okay, well, what's the likelihood of that happening? See, here's the thing that kind of drives me nuts when I think about it. It's like, if you're doing all of the right things, it's never going to be an issue until it is, right? That whole thing, like everything is okay until it isn't. It's the same kind of thing. Like, this isn't going to bother me at all. Like, if they made a new law and says you're not allowed to leave your neighborhood after midnight and before 6 a.m., for the most part, I kind of don't go out between midnight and 6 a.m., so I don't care. But I don't want you legislating that I can't leave my home between midnight and 6 a.m., you know, that kind of thing. It's one of those things where it's like, I'm doing the right thing. I'm not out, you know, breaking into cars or doing weird stuff between midnight and 6 a.m. But like, why can't you just let me be myself? Let me do my thing. But what I don't like is if there is a point in time where you have any kind of other issue with a government entity, and then they start researching whatever information that they have on you, and they go, oh, this person's a registered, you know, pollinator operation, registered beekeeper. Oh, well, let's use that to get access to the property then. Let's get the beekeeper guys in there. And since this person's been acting erratically lately, we'll bring law enforcement for their safety. And of course, now the law enforcement's looking around and seeing what they can see. No, we're just here to protect these people doing the bee inspection. Again, it just keeps reminding me of that thing I've mentioned several times with the old bumper sticker that used to say, you know, farmland lost is farmland lost forever. rights lost are the rights lost forever. Like, you don't get these rights back. Like, once they start taking away rights, there are lots of really great examples of this, but I'm not going to get into the subject line. But, you know, let's just say that, let's just take a car as an example. And you're like, hey, I love my car. And then you have somebody who's like, well, I'm a horse person and I hate your car, and cars kill 35,000 people a year on the highway, and your cars are dangerous. You know, only 4 or 5 people are dying from horse accidents every year. You should make your car illegal, right? I think there's a great case that can be made for that, but it's not about saving lives. Anyway, so the next piece of this here, the department could issue what's called a stop order. If they suspected a pest is present, they can shut down all activity at your apiary or even in an entire given area. They can also issue a quarantine order that could cover a county or even the whole state if they wanted to. And here's the kicker. Bees found outside of licensed locations like feral colonies or unregistered hives can now be destroyed without notice and without compensation. So you have, you know, your bees swarm, end up at the neighbor's house. You know, I've had this happen, end up in a tree in the neighbor's house. And someone calls and they're like, hey, I don't know what to do. There's this beehive showed up. And they can come over and destroy the bees. And you're like, oh, I was just racing home from work. I wanted to grab them real quick. And they're like, nope, bees dead, all over with. Or if they believe that you have infested equipment or your hives are unregistered, you go on vacation and you're not doing anything with the bees because you're gone, they can show up and be like, oh, unregistered hive, boom, burn it to the ground. Now, again, would they do that? I hope not. But they would be within their legal rights to do so if this legislation is passed. It specifically states that they can seize, treat, or destroy any plant, pollinator, colony, or article capable of harboring or transmitting a pest or pathogen. So I'm thinking about the small hive beetle, right? That's a pest. Or a wax moth. So would they destroy all of your stuff because of the presence of the hive beetle? I mean, I hope not, but they legally could. What if you had a disagreement with the inspector last time they were there or 3 years ago, and now they decide they want to harass you about something? Again, is it going to happen? Probably not, but don't open up the door to that. Anyway, so nowhere in the text does it define what qualifies as a pest, nor does it require confirmation of a bee disease like American foul brood before a certain action is taken. Pest is just kind of open-ended. It could include any organism the department considers undesirable. So obviously there are things like foul brood that are much more severe, but common things like hive beetles and wax moths and things like that. So when you compare that to the current bee law where you get written notice and time to treat before destruction and things like that, that's a little bit more palatable. But to just say, well, if we find it, we can do whatever we want, I'm not sure that I like that.
The holidays sneak up fast, but it's not too early to get your shopping done and actually have fun with it. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful, with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. When I was scrolling through their site yesterday, I actually ordered a retro 70s Give a Hoot, Don't Pollute t-shirt with Woodsy the Owl on it. It instantly took me back to my childhood. That's exactly the kind of things you'll find at Uncommon Goods. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, and because they're made in small batches, the best finds can sell out fast. They have something for everyone. Plus, every time you shop, Uncommon Goods gives back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice with each purchase. They've already donated more than $3 million to date. So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next order, go to uncommongoods.com/honey. That's uncommongoods.com/honey for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
Support for this podcast is brought to you by Walden University. Ever catch yourself thinking, what if I could go after what I actually want and really make a difference? You're not alone, and that's exactly why I want to tell you about Walden University. For over 50 years, Walden has helped working adults like you get the W with the knowledge and skills to build the future you want and make a difference where it matters most. If you've been waiting for the right moment, this is it. Head to waldenu.edu and take that first step. Walden University. Set a course for change. Certified to operate by Chev.
Now here's a nice change here. The new act requires that all licensees provide access to their records whenever the department requests them. So that means hive locations, movement records, sales records, shipment information. Just like any other business, just like a beekeeping operation, you are going to be required to maintain these like a commercial beekeeper would, even if you're just doing it as a hobby. Now, what I would say on the kind of flip side to this is you have the Emergency Assistance for Livestock and Pollinators, the USDA Federal ELAP program. If you want to get something from the government, right, emergency assistance, just like that, then you have to maintain great records. As we've discussed many, many times, I am a huge advocate and proponent for keeping great records. But they're your records, right? You don't have to give them to somebody else. You don't have to share them. But if you want something from government, you have to give the government, right? And it's like anything, right? You're hearing a lot on the news now about like EBT benefits and things like that, right? You have to go in and say, hi, here is my income situation. Here are my W-2s. Here's my tax forms. Here's my current, wage and earning statements. And this is why I'm eligible, right? If you want to get something for free or you want to get something from a government entity, you're going to have to open the doors up a little bit. But as a private citizen who says, look, I'm not asking for anything from them. I really would rather they just leave me alone. I will do the right thing. I will keep my notes. I will keep good records. I will treat for disease. If I need your help, I'll call you, right? That's the way it really ought to be with the government. If you need them, you call them. They shouldn't need to come and see you. So there's also a new risk-based inspection they're calling, and it's a system that increases inspection frequency for anyone they consider high risk. So the idea, according to the department, is to focus more attention on operations that could spread pests or diseases more easily. So the problem with that part of the bill is it never actually defines what risk means. It doesn't explain how risk is determined, what factors are used, or even how often those inspections might happen. So in theory, this could be based on hive movement, location, or even something as simple as not responding quickly enough to a notice. That makes it completely open, in my opinion, to interpretation, which means that some beekeepers could be inspected more than others with no clear explanation or way to appeal it. In short, the term risk-based sounds scientific, but in practice, it just gives the department more flexibility to decide who they want to inspect and how often. So again, it sounds kind of fair in theory, but without some clear definitions of what risk is, you know, that can mean whatever they decide that it means. So I'm not sure that I'm a big fan. The next one here is the one of the more exciting ones, the fees and the new programs. Under the current bee law, things are simple. You register the apiary with the Department of Agriculture. You pay the $10, covers all your hives, locations for up to 2 years. That's it. No hidden costs, no renewals every few months, no percentage of sales. Just pay your $10 and you're on the books. The new law replaces that with a licensing system instead of registration. So the Department of Agriculture would have the authority to set the fees by regulation, meaning they can raise or lower them at any time. No cap or upper limit is written into the bill. So the simple, $10 we've had for decades could turn into a reoccurring open-ended license cost. On top of that, the bill also creates a whole category of state-approved verification programs. So these are separate from the license itself. They are described as optional programs that producers can join to get certain certifications like pest-free, weed-free, any some other kind of status to help meet export or interstate shipping standards. But where it gets interesting is the department's own stakeholder brief says that they plan to fund those verification programs by charging a percentage of gross sales from anyone who participates. They even cite the Fruit Tree Improvement Program as an example, which currently charges 1% of total sales to cover state costs. So we're not talking about like a small filing fee here. It's a direct cut of what you make. Now, while the verification programs might start out as voluntary and geared towards commercial operation, there's nothing in the law that prevents the department from tying them to the licensing process later. So in other words, it's something that's optional today, but it could easily become a requirement tomorrow, especially if it turns into a reliable source of state revenue. So when you step back and you look at the old $10 that used to be in place, now that could be replaced by basically like an unlimited license fee. So for some operations, potentially, a percentage of their sales layered on top, this could be a pretty huge financial impact. Even hobbyists could end up paying new inspection or renewal fees just to keep doing what they've always done. The act also expands the definition of managed pollinators to include bumblebees, mason bees, and leafcutter bees. So that means the regulation could have definitely reached like schools or garden clubs or like small educational programs that use native pollinators. Well, now you guys are on the hook to roll over as well. So it's not really clear whether those groups would need to be licensed or inspected, but the language absolutely allows for it and could certainly implement that. Now let's talk about some enforcement and some penalties here. Violations include refusing entry, failing to provide records, or not meeting pest control standards. Penalties can include fines, license suspension, and cost recovery for any enforcement action taken against you. So if they destroy your hives because they believe there's a pest issue, they can then bill you for the cost of destroying your hives. So again, that's definitely a far cry from the cooperative kind of tone that you had with the current bee law. Now, you might be thinking, hey, Jeff, I'm over here in the free state of whatever, and we don't do this kind of crazy stuff they're doing in Pennsylvania. I get it, but I know for a fact there's another state doing similar things already that has already passed, and they don't use any of this hardly at all, but it's kind of there, or at least it was last time I had read some of it. But once a bill passes like this, I'm telling you, like I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of stuff that gets, you know, copy-pasted, a little bit of change here and there, and then lather, rinse, repeated in other places. And there's quite often a lot of collaboration between adjacent states as well. And so, you know, you get the Maryland, you get the New York, Ohio, West Virginia, some of these places that are nearby. We just don't want this to set a new precedent. Now, to be fair, you know, the intent behind the bill isn't necessarily bad, right? The department says it's all about modernization, pest control, keeping up with trade standards. There's nothing wrong with wanting healthy bees or having consistent inspection practices. But the problem is how far the authority is written to go and how can it impact small, non-commercial beekeepers who really have no voice in the process. I think regulation should really be proportionate to the risk. Like a backyard beekeeper with two hives shouldn't be treated the same as a pollination service running 500 or 1,000. Is it important? Is it important that all beekeepers, regardless of the size of your operation, take appropriate action to reduce and prevent disease and pests and things? Absolutely. It's critical. Everybody has to do it. But I don't know that this is necessarily the best approach here. So I would say that if you don't like the direction this is going, reach out to your legislators, you know, there in Pennsylvania. Make them aware of these things sooner than later. I think right now this is supposed to go to committee. It's been proposed, and I think it's supposed to go to committee for further discussion. But contact the state, you know, senator and rep, and you know, tell them you support healthy bees and science-based disease control and all that kind of stuff, but that excessive regulation and oversight that punishes, you know, hobbyist beekeepers for engaging responsibly in a managed backyard hobby might not be the best way to go. And another thing to kind of keep in mind, because I've heard some of these things floated around for a couple of years too, this could be like the first kind of step towards them saying, you know, about garden regulation. I've heard a lot of talk about this. Now, several states have actually enacted legislation at the state level to say that no local municipalities can restrict the growing of vegetables or things like that. But again, when you start giving up rights, other things follow along. And I can see with the close relationship between pollinators and with vegetables and fruits and agriculture as a whole, I think that a person who decides they want to have a quarter or an eighth of an acre little garden, you might start to be subject to things like this too. Once they've cracked the code and they figure out the formula for how to get, you know, get these things pushed through, I believe they're going to keep doing it. Maybe I'm wrong. I think the real key with it is making sure there's not a lot of money involved in it, because as we know, that governments are very addicted to spending taxpayer money. So if they can't really monetize this and they can't make a lot of money off of it, a lot of politicians probably aren't going to be really interested. So that's the stuff I would be targeting, making sure you're not paying excessive fees. You know, there's one other thought that I had as we kind of wind this up a little bit. A lot of people, I hear people saying things, oh, young kids today don't want to work hard. They just want the easy jobs and things. And I don't know how true that is. Like, I remember when I was young, I mean, I worked at like a pizza joint. I worked at McDonald's. I worked at Pizza Hut delivery. I worked at Rite Aid for a little while. I was cleaning grease pits at McDonald's and I don't know, cleaned the parking lot, cleaned the bathrooms. I was in the Army. I cleaned, God, all kinds of nasty stuff there. I mean, I don't know that young people are any more adverse to working hard today than they were before, but I think that there are a lot of easier paths to money. I just don't have a memory being young of particularly wanting to pursue lots of dirty, hardworking jobs. Like, I don't ever remember waking up and being like, you know what I'd like to do? Like, a friend of mine was in construction. He would go out and he'd go out at, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning and work until 7 o'clock at night, 8 o'clock at night. And he was just out in the sun all day in the heat. And I was like, man, that stinks. But he did it. I don't know. But either way, if you want to very rapidly start deterring young people from getting involved in things that they've maybe done with their families or done with friends, like beekeeping. You want to deter them away. Have them watch their parents go through a lot of hassle in dealing with oversight and regulation. And that's going to make them say, yeah, you know, I'm pretty passionate about beekeeping. And I really enjoy it. But I saw what my parents went through with the local folks, the government folks from the state ag department. I'm not dealing with that. So that's just another kind of consideration to make. But, you know, in full disclosure with this whole thing, I didn't read every single word of this. So it is entirely possible that I could have missed something. You know, if I lived in Pennsylvania, I would probably read the entire thing top to bottom. I did a lot of skimming, pulling out nuggets of information. It is entirely possible that, you know, three quarters of the way through, they said, JK, LOL, we're not really going to do this. I don't think that happened. But just, again, full disclosure, I did not read the whole thing. If I got anything wrong or missed anything, it was certainly not intentional or intended to deceive anyone. This is just what I pulled from the information that I read. But definitely stay informed on this and share the episode with people you know who are in Pennsylvania or adjacent states or anyone who is just interested in, you know, trying to stay on top of these kind of things. Because like I said, I think it can set a precedent. And one final thought here. Again, I want to thank you to all of you who support the show. I can't do it without you guys. Check out youtube.com/@beekeepingfornewbies, N-E-W-B-E-E-S, and we'll be getting a video done. I'm going to try to do it this week with all the parts and pieces of the project, but definitely within the next couple weeks, we'll have that moving forward, and we'll start getting that going with probably like at least a weekly progress update and show you some things we're doing, a little bit of soldering and all those kind of fun things. So keep track of things that are going on there. And the link to the Discord room is on the homepage. So go over there. And we do still have a real problem with this. I want to mention this again. When you join the Discord room, you're going to see nothing. There's like a completely empty channel that just says, read this first. There's a little channel on the left that says, read this first. You need to go in there into that channel, read the rules of the channel, and then just type YES if you agree with the rules. Once you've done that, myself or one of the moderators will see you and we will add you into the appropriate, you know, group, and you'll be able to see the whole server and the 50 channels that are in there or whatever. I see like all the time, there's probably 15 or 20 people right now that are just stuck in that little purgatory there just waiting to say yes. So if you have trouble with this, drop me a message and, you know, we'll try to help you get in. So folks, that's all I've got for you today. Take care. Be kind to one another. Remember that I love you. There's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.